Bro, did you hear your last podcast, man? You sounded like a chipmunk.
I mean, does it matter? I have the worst lisp in the history of mankind. Nah, you think I give two fucks about that? Come on, man.
Yes, seriously. You definitely do. What do you mean? Welcome to Rogue Bogues, another episode of the basketball podcast. Myself, Mike Procopio, and Trent, every now and then to prose scathing demise when he chimes in. But Pro, did you hear your last podcast, man? You sounded like a chipmunk.
I mean, does it matter? I have the worst lisp in the history of mankind.
The fans said it was an improvement, is my point.
Really? Nice. No, Trent, I gotta send you a fucking gift, so just let me know.
No, we had some audio issues, so apologies. When the upload happened, for some reason on the audio side, there were some issues. We rectified it as soon as possible. We thank everyone for letting us know. But shit happens with technology sometimes. The YouTube clip was perfectly fine, but the audio version on Spotify and a few other ones were shitty. And the problem is then if people have downloaded that episode, it'll sit in there. They're waiting to listen, and then it was the bad one. So what they had to do was delete that one and re-download it, which took some people some time to figure out, but a small mistake there. But I'm surprised Pro didn't see it, Trent. So you got off easy.
Very lucky. Very lucky. I was waiting for the text message.
Nah, you think I give two fucks about that? Come on, man.
Yes, seriously. You definitely do. What do you mean?
No, I only care when I'm 13 balls. Seconds late. And I only care when I'm 13 seconds late and you two fucks go without me and stab me in the fucking back. That's the only thing that gets me a little fucking riled up.
You have your seconds and minutes confused, but that's okay.
The fuck out of here. What I'm not confused about is Jock Landale is winning Australian of the Week. If you fucking anybody else gets voted this week for him, I'm going to say that you're going with no ID voting. I'm going to fucking count the votes myself. I'm going Jock Landale.
Oh, man. That's it. Well, we'll discuss that later, but that's you're jumping the gun a little bit. But yeah, Jock's playing well, but I don't know if he's – we'll see. We'll see. Stay tuned.
Houston Elite AAU won like five in a row, and the only change they made is Jock's playing like 20 minutes a night.
Yeah, so, that's fair enough. Fair enough. And they've played some fucking bum teams, but other than that, Jockey's is playing very well. We'll get to that in a second. Let's go with our team of the weeks. Who you got this week?
I'm not going to pick a team of the week, but I'll take the team of the week. I'm going to go with the Houston Rockets. Fucking five in a row, that team. Is it five in a row? Just let me double check.
It is.
Trent, you could. It is. Yeah. No. I mean, that team of all teams winning five in a row. Yes, they had some bums in there, but five in a row, they're actually. I think they looked up on the dictionary what fucking passing means, because they're actually passing the ball now. Well, they didn't last night, but passing the fucking ball, they look okay. The Şengün injury, which obviously we'll talk about, but that sucks. But they're an eyesore to watch most nights, but the last like week or so, they've been pretty good actually moving the ball and picking rolls and things like that. So I'm going to give it to them. I think they are playing well. The Şengün injury sucks, but, I'm not a huge Jalen Green fan. He's low IQ scorer and all that, but he actually was passing the ball and pick and roll scoring, had some big nights in the streak. And, I just like what I see. Van Vliet's doing his thing. Our guy Jock's doing his thing. I think, they've been playing. Now, how long is it going to last? Who the fuck knows? But are they still going to be a playing team? Maybe. I doubt. They're still an uphill battle for that. I'm not a huge Houston fan, as we know, but I thought they played okay. And the amnesia from the media in that organization that Jock could actually play, I'm glad he's getting minutes and actually making making an impact in their winning. So
yeah, I did as well. I had them. They've won five straight, 7-3 in their last 10. And the reason why I picked them as well, I know that they're bottom five right now, they're 11th, is just because you usually see teams in that bottom, if you're not in the play-in, they just start quitting at this point of the season and guys don't give a shit. Even Detroit, I give them credit as well. They've won some games lately. They're 4-6, which is a real improvement for them, but they're not quitting, a la the Wizards. Mm-hmm. They're actually battling and continuing to try and at least, if you don't come to play against those teams, they're going to beat you on any given night. You got to come motivated and ready to play. And I think Houston's a prime example of that. They're 3.5 behind 10. I don't think they'll get there, but it does make things interesting. There is, they've played 67 games, so they're you know, got 15 left. They maybe could sneak in. I just don't see the Lakers falling out just because, you know, the great story for them to be in, blah, blah, blah. And then you got Warriors at 9. But you look at Houston's schedule, they've got some winnable games coming up too. You know, I know they've won 5 straight. They're at Washington next, bro. They're playing Chicago and Utah and Portland at home. They could go on a little tear here. They could win those 4. Yeah. Then they've got at OKC, which is tough, at Utah, Dallas at home, at Minnesota, Golden State, Miami, Dallas, Orlando. And they finish with Portland and the Clippers. So they could maybe sneak in there. It's going to be hard, but I think they probably could peel off another 4 out of 5 here in the next week. And I hope they just put a little bit of pressure on one of those playing teams to see if they can steal a spot. But I had them getting in a plane because I thought Udoka would do well, young, hungry team, but it hasn't come together. It's been an ugly watch. I'd assume they're going to make some changes in the offseason. But credit to them, at this point in the season, not much to play for. Maybe can scrape into a plane. They're still fighting hard. So that's good to see. All right, I'll go my week first. Mm-hmm. I've got the Toronto Raptors. They've just fallen off a cliff. Scotty Barnes injuries. Basically, since then, they've really gone downhill. They've lost 7 straight. They just lost to Orlando. They're 1-9 in their last 10. They're the worst form team in the league right now. Injuries have played their part, but they were in the mix. They were in that bubble of playing teams a month and a half ago. Scotty Barnes playing really, really well. We'll have a stat about him later on in Useful or Useless. But look, they are in rebuild. They probably were achieving in the first half of the season, but their roster isn't horrible. You know, they obviously made that trade. They got RJ, you know, they got Barrett. They've got the commentator's favorite, Grady Dick, which seems to be a pun for every road team's commentators I've noticed when you tune into a Toronto game. They got Olenek in the trade. Gary Trent Jr. isn't bad. Boucher, Pirtle's okay. You know, Bruce Brown's over there as well. He got thrown in that trade quickly. Scotty Barnes. So they've got a decent team, Jalen McDaniels, but they just can't put it together. But they are about a 9, 10, 11, 12 in my opinion, but they've just been playing pretty bad over the last month.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's hard when you're not very good and you get some injuries and get some guys banged up. It's really hard. I mean, if you know, that team really without, you know, look, Quickley's been playing well. Trent's been very up and down, mostly down. Barrett's been giving him stuff. But, Scotty Barnes, look, 19-8, 19-8-6. I mean, you know, without him in the lineup, it's really hard to generate offense. Bruce Brown isn't that kind of guy. He's more of an energy guy. Grady Dick's been up and down. He's actually been playing well the last, you know, 6 weeks or so. He's actually found his way into the rotation and doing well. But I think they're sort of in flux of what they're really going to do. You know, like they got a bunch of okay players. I'm not a huge Barnes fan, but he does put up number. But like you got Barnes, you've got Barrett, you've got Quickley. You know, I Dick's probably the guy that they're sort of trying to build up a little bit and trying to like develop into being a starting sort of shot maker, straight line driver and things like that. But yeah, I don't know what direction they're going to, Bogues. I know they're struggling and, you know, I don't know. They're trying, but yeah, they're definitely struggling right now.
And Trent just pulled it up, and Pro actually sent me the screenshot as well. All-time jersey swap was done between Toronto and Orlando. What's his first name?
Anthony Black.
Yeah, Anthony Black. And Grady Dick did a jersey swap as a class of 23, and a nice little photo of one of them is holding a jersey that says Black, and the other one's holding a jersey that says Dick. So you do the math there.
I mean, does anybody fucking in social media have a fucking brain in their head? I mean, does anyone think that, like, yeah, you know, look, NBA Central and some of these other fucking guys doing that, that's cool. That was on the Orlando Magic.
Was it really, though? Thing. Or it's screenshot. Almost, surely it's photo. Was it really? I wonder if it's still up there. Surely. Because it is a screenshot. You have to worry when it's a screenshot and not a direct link to their page.
At Orlando Magic on Twitter.
And with AI and all that kind of stuff, you just never know. Maybe. These days. But dude, it is.
Maybe.
It is. Looking at it right now, it is a classic photo for those people that want to jump on and Google. It's a jersey swap that basically says Black Dick, which is
pretty interesting. If the actual team posted that on their social media, they did.
Yeah, they did.
They did.
Orlando's kind of known for being
taking
a bit
the piss.
Of, yeah.
Oh, like, they've got a great account, actually.
They do. Yeah. They do have a very funny account. They had the Joe Ingles clip early this year that they milked.
It's pro doing the socials for him. All right. Who's your weak team, bro?
I don't really have one, so I'm going to go on yours. Everybody's doing what they're supposed to do, but yeah, I agree with the Toronto thing.
Okay.
You can't, there's only so many times you could do fucking Washington and some of these guys. So
yeah, but they've won, I think Toronto won a little bit. Even the shitty teams have kind of gone like, you know, 4-6 and 3-7 in the last couple of weeks. So you got to give them some credit. Yeah. All right. So talking about the rule change or the tweaks to defense that we spoke about a couple of weeks ago that was trending and about the league looking at changing stuff. The league's completely try to back away from this because the NBA is saying isn't saying there was a directive to reduce offense. Instead, the league cited a number of factors that have reduced scoring in recent months. The NBA noted this trend will continue to be monitored. Slower pace, style of play, competitive intensity, officiating focus have all been contributing factors identified thus far. Part of officiating focus was the league instructing officials to not call fouls when offensive players are hunting for free throws or veering off path to seek fouls. In a memo, the NBA said there would be a point of emphasis to evaluate the state of offense versus defensive balance with a focus on legal guarding position and level of contact on pathway plays to the basket. Well, they've backtracked from that and said, no, we're not trying to change any rules. We're not doing any of that because obviously people are fired up. It's severely affected betting. Vegas odds have changed. A lot has changed on combined totals for games and all that kind of stuff. So they've tried to back away by saying we're not directly trying to influence officials or the games, but they kind of had to say that publicly. But I think it is on their mind a little bit, but they have to just kind of word it a little bit differently, I think, bro.
Yeah, it is a little weird when they're coming out and saying, you know, making statements like that. It just... You know, I think it's been a talking point the last few weeks about something needs to be done and, you know, what they're going to do. And, it was sort of an interesting deal. I don't know how you fix it or address it, but I'm sure there's going to be a million different things sort of talked about. So, yeah, I don't know where it's going to go. But it is a little strange when the NBA has got to come out and almost defend itself about this stuff. But, yeah, I mean, you keep watching the games. These guys keep going to the free throw line like crazy and, you know, and scoring and you know. I just
it's
don't
just the
see
hunting
it.
Ones, though. That's a fair point. Like when your defender's sliding with you and the offense takes a direct path sideways into him to initiate the contact constantly, that just gets me, you know, because there's other rule with the charge circle in the NBA. Those not familiar, if you're in the charge circle as a big, there's a rule you have to leave your feet. You cannot stand straight up in the charge circle planted on the floor. You have to actually jump. So what offensive players do is if they see you standing in the circle, they just like bowling ball into you and get two free throws because the rule says the big didn't leave his feet. But sometimes you don't have enough time to jump because they're just, you know, they're pinballing into you. So those kind of plays need to change where they're directly hunting fouls. It's ugly to watch. I don't like it. I don't enjoy it. You're trying to fool the officials. I think FIBA's done a really good job of that, but foul hunters in FIBA just look like idiots because they'll just let you fall on your ass. They're like, all right, you want to initiate it and swing through and hit the defensive player? They just let you fall over. There's the turnover, you go on the other way. You only do it once or twice till you stop doing it. So it is interesting that the league has come out and tried to make a comment on it saying like, oh, no, we're not trying to do anything, but they clearly have made some mandates. Schroeder and D'Angelo Russell – interesting one. I didn't have this on the run sheet. We brought it up pre-going live. I didn't have it on because the context of it's so strange. But D'Angelo Russell said that Dennis Schroeder was the reason he couldn't establish a relationship with head coach Darvin Ham when he was with the Los Angeles Lakers. Pro, one of the more mind-boggling comments I've seen from a guy that, you know, is no longer teammates with somebody to say that, you know, I couldn't establish a relationship because of my backup. I believe D'Angelo was starting at that time still. Schroeder was backing him up. Very, very strange, bro.
Well, I call bullshit, to be honest. I mean, you don't really know unless you're there, but I just call bullshit. I know Darvin Ham. Yeah, you know, I worked camps with him for years. One of the more approachable good dudes you want to meet. Most head coaches, especially first year head coaches, are going to want to establish, you know, relationships with most, you know, all of their players. And I think that, look, if you track this thing back and if you talk to players that played with, you know, Russell or D'Angelo, you would, you know, say that he's not the most likable guy. He's not the most coachable guy in most of the spots that he's been in. So, you know, and it's just a weird deal that, like, you're talking about something that happened a year ago. And, you know, look, Schroeder's not the most likable guy either. So it is pretty comical that these two fucking guys are going back and forth about, you know, about relationships and things. But I don't understand it. It's not like he's your, you know, it's not like a girlfriend where you can only have one guy. I mean, it's the head coach. I don't care if he's got a relationship with your backup or the guy in front of you, that you can't go in his office and just talk to him. You can't, you know, try to start this relationship. I call bullshit. I think that he's just making excuses. I have no idea where this is coming from. But, like, again, if you talk to people that's been around the guy, you know, of course, teammates right now will back him up. Oh, he's the greatest guy ever, but not the most likable guy. And, you know, this is just sort of him. And it's sort of, you know, follows the mold of just blaming everybody else for those issues. So, yeah, I do call bullshit on it.
Well, he did cause a divorce as well. So,
yeah.
You know, he's had quite the rap sheet. He does have, what is this? Is this a team option? He has a player option pro at 18 million. My question for you, does he opt out and does someone get fooled by his current form of the last month and a half?
I think that he will opt out just because of the fact that, like, I think they would have his bird rights, if I'm not mistaken. So he could just opt out. They could re-sign him to a longer deal if they wanted him. Now, here's the thing with them is, like, first of all, will a team get fooled into it? I think a team that's standing there late in free agency, mid-July, late July, will be like, all right, like, if he's on the market, you know, they'll be like, all right, you know, we'll take him, you know, we'll give him 1+1 or 3-year, 2-year guaranteed, non-guaranteed year 3, just so they don't have to hold on to him long. A team that can't really sign guys, I think that's it. I think he just has not the greatest. Look, there was no trade value for him this year. Everybody thought he was going to get dealt. Nobody really wanted to take that grief. So I do think that it's going to be hard for the Lakers to really, you know, to acquire those types of players. I mean, you look at 183 right now, salary for them, give or take. They're at 174 next year. Even without his 18, you know, you're looking at, oh, you're still over the cap. So, and it's, you can't really acquire talent. They're going to be probably a taxpayer mid-level, which is very low. They're not going to have the full mid-level to use. So I just think that they're going to want him to re-sign. They're going to want him to opt in or re-sign him for that 18. Just because now you look, they're not a very good team, but you erase him from their team, you know, with just LeBron and AD, and where do you go from there? So I think that I think that there will be a team late in free agency that didn't sign anybody that has some, you know, cap room that's going to give them a short-term deal for right around that number, in my opinion. But you never know with the market, but there's always one team, you know.
Well, food for thought. Jordan Poole is 27, 30, 33 million over the next course of years. He's averaging 16.5 points, 2.5 rebounds, 3.9 assists, 40% from the field.
Yeah.
D'Angelo Russell is averaging 18 points, 3 rebounds, 6.3 assists, 46% from the field. So that's a comparable player. You compare him, they're similar ages. I think Paul's 3 years younger. Does he get bumped up to a 30 million, you know, by somebody? That's a question.
The only retort to that, Bogues, that I would say is he was coming off winning in Golden State. Washington, you know, I think they got him in a sign and trade, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe I am. But, like, Washington was in a total rebuild, traded out all their good, you know, all their talent. And, you know, and then I think they just needed a guy to see, you know, to kick the tires on him. I don't think he was at around the league enough to know what you're going to really get being away from that whole, you know,
Warriors, yeah,
Golden State machine, right? So he got him. They saw, they just made a mistake. They know it. He, you know, well, they'll never admit it. It's the, you know, but, like, they made a mistake. He's definitely not worth the $30 million. So, yes, they are comparable, but I don't think a team's really going to empty the bank to get him. Then again, we've seen dumber things happen. I just think he's been around the block so much that he overexposed himself on and off the court of what he can and can't do. He's not a bad player. Like, if he's your fourth best player on the floor, I think you're in good shape. But I don't think he's a marquee guy. Maybe he's your third guy, but you know, he's just not that anymore. You know, I don't even know if he was ever that. I know in Brooklyn he was pretty good, but I just think that right now, you know, I think, you know, 18 to 20 million is his number. And I think that that's a decent number. Now, I think he's going to opt out. Everybody does. But I think that they're going to just, you know, probably just try to maybe sign him to an extra year or an extra two, whatever. But I just don't see him. I don't see him really crossing that 22 million mark. But again, we've been fooled before.
Yeah, strange things happen. Isaiah Thomas back in the league, 10-day contract with the Phoenix Suns. Good to see him back. A long journey for him, so you respect the grind. He was averaging 33 points in the G League, so whether he sticks or not, who knows, but a nice little bit of bench offense for Phoenix Pro. And the other Isaiah Thomas, old school Isaiah Thomas from the Bad Boys, you see his comments? He needs, Pro, not an in-person, not a state, not a national. He needs an international apology to salvage his relationship with Michael Jordan, Pro. An international apology, not just one of these mundane man-to-man apologies, a fucking old school shake your hand and say sorry. He wants an international apology. So I don't know how he's going to pull that off, but that's what he wants, to salvage his relationship with MJ.
Bogues, we've seen a lot of things in our days. We've seen a man on the moon. We've seen a lot. We've seen me eat a salad, or at least I've seen myself eat a salad once in a while. You're never, ever, 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 ever going to get that. But, like, you just got to let that shit go. Look, he hates you. You hate him. Let's fucking end it. You know,
I just felt it funny that he said international.
International.
I need an international apology. Yeah, none of this fucking regular apology shit.
So do they have to like fly MJ to the equator and just have him apologize from like
Greenland,
a private jet? Yeah. Going over international airspace.
I don't know. I thought it was comical. I saw the quote and that's what stuck out to me. He was the international fighter. Isaiah Thomas, different cat. I mean, I had some teammates that played for him in New York. Dave Lee, a few other people said I think Dave Lee was there with him. It was an interesting time.
I told you my story with Isaiah Thomas, right? So he ran the CBA, which was the D League back in like 90. Oh man, I don't even know when this was, like 99 or so. And he bought the CBA. And like CBA was a very good minor league, was very well run, had a lot of just like all these cities all over the country, all these minor league towns, and it was playing well. He bought it, you know, and put basically all his family on payroll, way overspent, fucking put the league into the ground in about a year and a half. So Billy Curley, I don't know if you ever heard of Billy Curley. Billy Curley played the NBA about 9-10 years, journeyman, played at Boston College, really good player, Massachusetts guy. They had summer league in Boston, you know, back at, you know, before Vegas became really big. I'm sitting there in the stands. I didn't work for a team at the time. I was sitting there with an agent friend of mine, and Billy's younger brother, Mickey, played at Boston College, 6'11", big dude. He played in the CBA, and since it went bankrupt, they still owed him like $1,500. So, you know, Isaiah just, there was like a Sports Illustrated article of how he fucked the whole league up, how like they had all these good local sponsorships and he eliminated all local sponsors and said, we're only going to do national sponsors. Had like BET and something else for small amounts. Well, anyways, Mickey Curley was owed like $1,500 maybe $800. And Isaiah just got hired by either the Knicks or in Indiana. I think he just got hired by Indiana. So him and Mark Aguirre are there in the like in the corner of the gym. Everybody's taking pictures with him. Mickey comes by and he said, because Billy was playing at the time, it was like his last year in summer league, and you know, trying to get with a team. And he goes, hey, you still owe me $800, and just walked by him. So he walks past us and say, yeah, I just talked some shit to Isaiah Thomas, whatever. Isaiah and Mark Aguirre sprint up the fucking steps to try to fight Mickey Curley and like five of his family members. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? You got media right there. Thank God there's no social media back then. But like, I'm like, and I was right there. It wasn't a story I heard. And it was fucking hilarious. They had to get separated and fucking bring police up there because Isaiah Thomas wanted to chase up some fucking guy that, you know, that fucking talked shit to him in a fucking, in a Division III gym.
A touchy subject when you bankrupt the league, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. CBA, it was a great league.
CBA was really good. I remember it when I was younger. Like, it was 90s. You know, when they went under early 2000s, was it? Late 90s?
Yeah. So I was scouting in the league late 90s. I would go to, because they had a team in Connecticut. That league lasted for like, it was like a 15, 20 year deal. Great local sponsorship. They had a few teams that would go under here and there, but most of the like solid teams, a few of them actually got acquired by the D League when they came into existence. Mm-hmm. But it was a really, really well run league. And like, they had just good local sponsors. The NBA sort of gave it some money, some seed money to keep it going. They had some really good players that played in it. Like, one year, like, Adrian Griffin played in it. Kevin Ollie played in it. I mean, there was a lot of
coaches that came from CBA, too. A lot of coaches.
Yeah.
Yeah, back in the day.
Yeah, a lot of good coaches that came in. Yeah, so that was my Isaiah Thomas story. I thought that was pretty fun. Yeah.
Well, anyway, I don't think he's getting his apology anytime soon from MJ. If you know MJ's MO, he's apologizing for anyone, anything. No. A few housekeeping things. Jamal Mosley signs a 4-year extension. Good job by Orlando. Russell Westbrook, hand surgery. He'll be back for the playoffs. Benedict Mathurin out for the season with a torn labrum. Sengun is out for the season with a high ankle sprain. Bismack Biyombo collapses. Did you see that? That was some scary shit.
Yeah, it was scary. And, you know, it's fun. It's just weird because people are saying, well, he got locked knee. He did this, he did that. I think he went on social and said he was like dehydrated. At least that's what he said.
Yeah, lock knee my ass. His eyes on the back of his head. He fell straight. Lock knee's not, you don't fall like a plank of wood. He fell straight back. That was scary. So it's good to see he's fine. Rudy Gobert fined $100K for doing the money sign signal. I mean, who the fuck would do that in their right mind? I mean, no one would do that. I did that, bro. I got fined for it by FIBA. when we got absolutely hosed by the officials versus Spain, still a touchy subject. But yes, he got fined $100K for that, bringing the league into disrepute. Don't have to get into that too much. Last kind of bit of housekeeping, or a little bit of news. Doc Rivers was on record this week of saying the Clippers should retire 3 players' jerseys with the Clippers, which is DeAndre Jordan, Blake Griffin, and Chris Paul. Give me your thoughts on that.
Look, I was a longtime Clipper fan before I joined the NBA, you know, and they went through some dark times. You know, they had Bill Walton, Danny Manning goes down an injury, Ron Harper goes down with a knee injury. Then they were in the, you know, they were in the sewer for so long. I could see why you could say, like, outside of Kawhi and you know, Kawhi and Paul George, what they're doing now, that sort of team was an exciting team, brought a lot of joy to the team as far as like how they played, style of play. They didn't really have much postseason success. So that's where you say, well, wait a minute, you know, I don't agree with that. But you look around these arenas, Bogues, you've been in them 1,000 times each. Like, there are some guys in the stands, even if a team didn't win, they sort of, you know, they sort of gave some recognition to some players. I don't know. Not DeAndre Jordan, no offense to DeAndre. Like, if I was going to give it, like, Chris Paul meant a lot to that organization, you know, and Blake Griffin obviously being the first pick in the draft, you know, his draft year, missing the year with the knee and then doing some good things. I just don't, I'm at a place where, look, did you impact winning not only in the regular season and the postseason? And they really had some horrific showings in the postseason. So, you know, as far as like their talent versus how they did, so I can't really get around it, but they did bring a lot of joy to that arena for, you know, a few years. Because, like, look, before that Chris Paul trade, they really weren't going anywhere. He did a lot for them, and then Blake's development over the years. But I can't really bring myself to say you got to bring him in. But then again, like, I'm not a Clipper fan anymore, so I don't, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how he really impacted things. So I would say I would be against it. What about you, Bogues?
I'm the same. I mean, the bar was super low. I mean, I heard stories, Clippers, they used to work out. Apparently they had a community gym in Compton or somewhere in the hood. They used to work out it, and they said they'd come out of practice and their rooms would be missing and shit, and car stereos would be ripped out of their out of their cars. They said that they get booted by the, you know, the local Bloods or the Crips or whoever would come in at like 2:30 to, because they, you know, hey, we're playing open runs right now. They get booted off the court. It was really rough back then. Then you had all the Sterling shit. So it hasn't been a lot of positivity for the Clippers. But I just think I'm more of a, you gotta, you know, unless you've been at a club 20 years and really impacted the community. So I would argue maybe Dirk, without a chip, you probably could side towards retiring, regardless, right? Like even if you didn't get that championship. Yeah. But I'm still leaning towards you gotta get a championship. I think at least that Lob City period was fun to watch. It was awesome basketball to watch. They brought a lot of fanfare. They actually got the Clippers, but you know, LA was buzzing for the Clippers for a while, which was interesting to see. But you gotta if they nabbed the championship in that run, which they should have. I mean, they had a really good stacked team, they had a good bench. You know, Lou Will was there. Like they had a
JJ Redick.
They had a really good team and some really good role players throughout, and they just couldn't get it. They kept choking. They kept choking and choking, and that's why I can't get around it. I think you gotta get some wins. And yes, you're right, there are some teams that have retired jerseys from guys that didn't win a championship. But I'm probably against some of those as well. But I think I disagree with Doc. I think he's maybe trying to scapegoat how bad they choked throughout the years whilst he was there, but they definitely should have won some championships. They were a tough team, but they never really got better. Like it was kind of when I was with the Warriors, once we kind of surpassed them, they were in our rear view. We were never really threatened by them at all. Once we finally broke that glass, because we couldn't beat them for a while, and then all of a sudden we just started playing more kind of strong fundamental basketball against them, didn't let them get out on the open floor, and they couldn't beat us. So I'm with you. I don't think they should do those guys. I think wait when they have some success, win a championship, put those guys' jerseys up, whether that's Kawhi, PG, whether it's this era. But you don't want to reward just because it was a nice style of basketball to watch, like didn't really impact winning. So I agree there. Aussies of the week. Let's see who wins it, pro. Drum roll. Dante Exum, pretty good week for him. 6.4 points, 2.4 rebounds, 3.2 assists. Dyson Daniels still out, obviously with injury with that left meniscus tear. Josh Green's just having a roller coaster of a season. He's had periods where he's averaged double digits in the every two weeks that we do this. He's back down the bottom of the roller coaster. He's 4.5 points, 1.8 rebounds, 1 assist.
He's out 2 weeks.
Yeah, is he? Just got hurt.
Sprained ankle.
Okay, sprained his ankle. Yeah, I saw he was out today. I just thought that rested him. I didn't see that one. But yeah, he's been up and down. Now another injury, which won't help in and out of the rotation. Joe Ingles, just plugging along. 4.6 points, 1.1 rebounds, 2.1 assists, 7 for 11 for 3 in that period. So shooting it much better. Just kind of letting it come to him. You watch their games, he's not pressing at all. He's not trying to overextend himself or overplay, just comes on, plays his role in that pick and roll, gets a couple of assists, knocks the three down, gets subbed back out, and he's happy with life. So good for him. Jock Landale, big improver. He was actually starting to get rotation minutes even before the Sengun injury. So a lot of people are going to think, oh, he's playing because Sengun's out. He was kind of starting to crack the rotation after All-Star, getting 7 to 10 minutes. And now with that injury, he's getting more minutes. 7.1 points, 4.1 rebounds, 1.8 assists for Jock. So a really, really good week. Shooting the three ball again, knocked a few down over the last couple of weeks, which is good to see. Patty Mills, a day after, we were like, shit, is anyone going to pick him up? What's going to happen? A day after he signs with Miami, so we assumed that was already done and just had to clear waivers and whatnot. 3.8, he had a really good first game against OKC. I think it was, knocked some big shots down, been cold since, but 3.8 points, 1.1 rebound, 1 assist per game over the last 2 weeks. Matisse Thybulle had a very good week, quietly going about his business over there, especially defensively still. His defensive numbers are really good, but 8.6 points, 3.8 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 2 steals a game, 1 block, 11 for 21 from 3. So that 3 ball is key for him. Josh Giddey, 15.3 points, 6.8 rebounds, 4.5 assists, 7 for 24 from 3, and he wins it this week, bro. Josh Giddey gets the nod. I mean, 15, he's gone up. His scoring has improved. He's had a really solid week. The 3 ball still iffy, but 15, 7, and 5. Still not closing games for OKC Pro. That's the interesting thing with him. He plays the bulk of his minutes in the first half, plays a little bit in the third, might start the fourth, but when it's not cutting time, OKC have just kind of gone away from him in that closeout lineup. I think a lot would have to do with the fact that SGA's got the ball in his hands as their primary producer.
Mm.
Josh would have to be off the ball, and that three ball is just not there yet for him. So that's been real interesting there. Ben Simmons out with another back surgery. So he's out for the season. This is, I believe it's his third back surgery in a matter of years, second back surgery in a matter of years. Thank you, Trent. The timeline in Brooklyn, 2021, zero games. 2022, 23, 42 games. This season, 17 games. He's owed $40 million next season, Pro. So you never want to see injuries, but he just walked under too many ladders. It just seems like a lot of bad luck. That back's not right. You hope another offseason he gets it right. Obviously, he'll be out for the Boomers. Once again, we don't even have to get into that, but he'll be out. And just finally, Duop Reath lost a lot of his minutes now. DeAndre Ayton's come back, and he's played very well, DeAndre Ayton. He's put some big numbers up the last couple of weeks, albeit they're not really playing for much, but he's putting up some big numbers. So Duop Reath's numbers have dropped massively. He's at 4.8 points and 1.6 rebounds. But Josh does get it, Pro. Jock was up there, but you can't go against. I think Tease might have even piped Jock this week, but Jock's in the top three, so he wasn't even in the conversation a couple of weeks ago. So it's good to see him back in the rotation.
Yeah, I'm just glad. I'm glad they figured it out. Look, they got really good young talent, but they do lack a lot of basketball IQ. And I think having 18 to 20 minutes a night of somebody who's got a high basketball IQ, plays hard, screens well, and could play make out of that short role has really helped them. I think by when they weren't playing him, I think that they just look, he impacts winning. He's not like Karl Malone or anything, but I'm just saying like he does impact winning. Having that guy that's high IQ, high motor is important. So I'm just glad he's back up.
He plays his role. He rolls hard.
Yeah.
Runs the court. Yeah. Isn't going to try to overdo things like a lot of guys on their team are going to try to over dribble all that kind of stuff. He's kind of keeps the game simple, which is what they need in that lineup. So good for Jock. All right, stats, useful, useless. We've got a shitload of these today, so let's go through them quickly. But Wemby is the first rookie since who with 200 blocks in a season?
Shaq?
Tim Duncan.
Ah.
But useful, useless.
Useful. I mean, it's a fucking lot of blocks, man. I mean, he's killing it. Which I think you might. I think there's going to be a media campaign about getting him rookie of the, defensive player of the year. So I think you might be onto something there, the books.
Yeah, I don't know. I think their record's too bad. I think they're going to have to give it. It'll be Rudy's not getting it after the money sign thing. They've put a name through a line through his name. But yeah, I just don't think enough. If they weren't playing, I think he's got a really good chance. But no bueno. I think it's useful. 200 blocks, and he's going to eclipse 200 because they've still got 15 odd games left, and he's almost at, two or three a night over the last couple of weeks. Mikal Bridges, 459 games played without missing one. So he's played every game of his NBA career so far. Useful, useless.
Useful. Iron Man.
Yeah.
Iron Man.
Albeit one of them was that, I think there was a bullshit one in there. No. There was
Didn't he double up that one year where he got traded and he got the extra game when he got traded to Brooklyn?
I'm not sure about that, maybe, but what I'm saying is there was a game where they played him like 7 minutes or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe even less. Like he literally just came in and started. In,
yeah, because they wanted to rest him. I think was that this season?
It was last season. On the game that Pro's talking about. He was the first guy ever to play 83 games in a season because he got traded.
Yeah.
And in that like 82nd or 83rd game, like literally just started, got subbed out within seconds.
But still, he was healthy enough to play. So good on him. I mean, that's to play that many games in a row. Fantastic. Scotty Barnes, Pro, is the only player in the NBA to lead his team in every stat, every major stat. Points, rebounds, assists, blocks, steals. Useful, useless.
I'm saying useless. They're fucking terrible.
But they fell off after he got hurt. They were in play-in territory,
dude.
And Scotty Barnes got hurt, and now they've just plummeted.
I mean, that's pretty impressive, though. Like, even if they're not very good, that's very impressive to be able to do that. So, yeah, I think it's useful.
I think it's useful. I think leading your team in all stats is pretty hard to do, all five. I mean, I don't know if it's more, is it as
Scotty Barnes good thing or is him, it's a shitty thing. It's probably somewhere in between, but good for him. Daniel Gafford, pro, entered Thursday's primetime game against OKC. Just three made field goals away from surpassing Wilt Chamberlain's 57-year-old record of 35 consecutive field goals made. He was at 33, I believe, and missed his first shot of the game. so that put a a line through it against the Thunder. But pretty impressive streak, albeit a lot is around the basket for him. But you gotta be there to throw him down. Put him in. He's got Luka and Kyrie there to give him some easy looks. But, yeah, some history missed there, pro. Useful, useless.
I'd say it's useful. I mean, now the only thing you would say that Chamberlain probably made 35 where he had to post up and do some things, and he's literally just catching lobs from Luka. But I don't watch enough of the Mavericks because of Bally's. Thank you very much. So I don't really know about what Gafford's doing in Dallas. I always see them from time to time on national games. So
get a VPN, yeah, bro. I'll say it's get a VPN. You can watch your league pass through your VPN, bro. You know?
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Yeah. AD is 0-10 versus Sabonis dating back to 2016. And he's also 1-7 versus Embiid over the last eight and lost his last seven to Jokic. Useful, useless.
It's useful for the international crowd, I'll tell you that. He can't fucking beat anybody internationally, but maybe the international thing and Jordan's international apology could come hand in hand, but that is useful, man. I mean, can't beat those guys. They play hard, and, you know, look, Sacramento isn't very good, and Indiana, yeah, I think he was still on Indiana too during that streak with Sabonis, so yeah,
it's I think he struggles against physical strong bigs, you know. There's that whole AD five spot debate that has been had over the last 3 years. He doesn't love playing the five spot, but with the way the small ball's going, you kind of have to play bulk five spot minutes if you're AD. Doesn't love the physicality of it, and I think this stat shows that. I think the big bodies that he has to guard, he's not a fan of. He's a great shot blocker, especially weak side, but he's always been a guy that was a little thin that you could put in – under the basket and really kind of get good positioning on, and this kind of proves that. So pretty impressive to see Sabonis going 0-10 versus him, which is interesting. For the first time since 2016, two teams scored under 80 points, bro. The 76ers beat the New York Knicks 79-73 last week. Useful, useless.
Useless. Who gives a fuck? Yeah, finally. That was their testing game. That's the league's testing game about not calling anything. But I mean, yeah, I'd say it's, I don't know, useful, I guess, but, you know, it's just a blip.
It's pretty useless. It's one game. But the Knicks have also held opponents to under 80 points in three straight games for the first time since 2000. I think they've been the first team to do that since 2000.
Now, probably. That's useful.
In today's day and era, to hold a team under 80 in one game, let alone three, is impressive. So that's a useful one. And last one, Luka records six straight 30-point-plus triple-doubles, becoming the only player in NBA history to do so. And has recorded seven straight triple-doubles with that stat, bro. Useful, useless.
That's useful. That's pretty impressive. 30-point triple-doubles. Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
Hard to do. And I still don't believe he's gone up there now, but he should be in the MVP conversation. I had him as a pick preseason, just as a flyer, thinking that if he's healthy, he'll have a chance. I think he's up there. And, you know, Dallas is stuck in that plane, you know, that 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Maybe that's why he's not getting as much attention. And by the way, what a game winner today by Kyrie Irving. I don't know if you saw that one. Unbelievable. He shot a left-handed half hook floater from outside the free throw line.
he's the best finisher in NBA history. I don't think there's a better guy finishing in the paint area, right-handed, left-handed, than him. He's very impressive.
That was outside the paint, though. Watch a replay, bro. Yeah. He shot that from outside the free throw line.
Like his left hand sick.
Yeah. So unbelievable shot. Unbelievable game if you haven't seen it. Unbelievable finish that game as well. Luka hit a big three. Murray hit a big three before that. So watch those highlights if you can. All right, moving on to the NBL, quick semi-final recap, Illawarra versus Melbourne. Really good series, Illawarra, credit to them. They really fought. Melbourne took it over, but I think Illawarra a little hard done by. Should have won game one, in my opinion. I think that last couple of minutes got absolutely hosed by the officials, in my opinion, and a lot of people's opinion, I think. But I will say this, Illawarra were up 16 with 8 minutes left in that quarter.
they did choke it. They did choke it. But then when the game got tight and the calls were 50-50, they all just seemed to go United's way, and they go to overtime. They win game one. Illawarra win game two. 1-1 going back to Melbourne, and then Melbourne pretty much ran them over. So Melbourne in the grand final there, and then Tasmania versus Perth was a similar story, but the other way around. It was Perth out home court early. They win game one. They go to Tasmania. They lose game two, and then game three, Tasmania just run all over Perth. A really impressive showing both offensively and defensively. Perth could not get any stops late in that game. So Scott Rothpro goes to another grand final. He beats, you know, Perth, who were the favourites in that series, I think. And then it kind of started to swing a little bit late in that series. But he's off to another grand final, which game one was yesterday. And then his team laid an absolute egg, Tasmania versus Melbourne yesterday. Super physical game. But Tasmania never really felt like they were in a position to win that game. It just felt like Melbourne were locked in. They were super physical. They were up and in their guards, and they just couldn't get anything easy. And Melbourne got a lot of easy stuff at times. Dally's having a hell of a run here in the finals and just dictating terms. His stats weren't off the page yesterday, but he's done a fantastic job just keeping that motor running for that team. They got very good, you know, with him and Ealy in the backcourt guarding Tasmania's guards. Tasmania just got nothing easy. But game two is in Tasmania, a really hard place to play. I'm picking Tasmania in that one. I think this series has a potential to go, barring injuries, has a potential to go five, if not four. I think the X factor, I tweeted this on socials, I think it's Ian Clark. I think when you look at match for match, their starters versus starters, pretty even. But the depth of Tasmania's bench, I think, will be a problem. Marcus Lee can't play as much because at times Melbourne do go small. And Ian Clark, you have a luxury of, if your offense is sputtering, your starters aren't playing well, you know, CG43 and Dally and Achul aren't shooting the ball well, and you just throw Ian Clark in there like they did. I think he hit four or five threes last night. We had that in Sydney, and he was just sensational in that role, and just a proven winner, hates losing, will figure it out and can adjust quarter to quarter or half to half after having bad moments. So I think he's going to be the one that decides this series. That's that. It hopefully goes five games. The Sydney Kings have signed Brian Gorgeon, an NBL basketball legend. Pro, you'll be familiar with him, surely. National team coach, winningest coach in NBL history, I believe. Been around for eternity. We've tried to get him numerous times. A lot of people won't know that, but we've tried to go after him. I think we tried to reach out to him the year we signed Will Weaver. He was still in Asia. Then the year we signed Chase, we were trying to have conversations with him, got knocked back. I think he was in Illawarra that time still. So, and yeah, I mean, it's just a great signing for the club. It's kind of, he used to coach the Kings Pro. I'm not sure if you're familiar, but he coached the Kings in the early 2000s, won a three-peat back in the day. So a lot of history there. We know our fans and everybody's really excited. I know a lot of ticket sales requests have come in just based on that signing, which is awesome. And free agency's opening will open, I think it's 2 weeks after the last grand final game. So we don't know when that is, but we can talk to people outside of the league, obviously, and for Sydney Kings fans and NBL fans, there's a lot of good news coming in the next couple of weeks. So keep that in mind. We have some really good announcements, really big announcements coming. Really pumped about the direction of where that's all going and working through it. But obviously, we can't talk to other clubs' players, quote unquote. Can't talk to other clubs' players. No one does that, Pro. Everyone waits till free agency is legally open. That's when you can start doing it. You can't do it before. You know, it's like July 1 in the NBA, and someone signs at 1 minute after midnight. That was all just done in that 1 minute. So don't believe the opposite there. But we have some good news coming, so I'm pumped on that. And just quickly, WNBL grand final finished. Perth Lynx versus Southside Flyers. One of the all-time chokes, Pro, I've ever seen in the basketball circles, Pro. Perth win game one. They win game one at Southside, which is in Melbourne. They go to game two in Perth. Long trip, you know. They're in full control of the game. Southside make a run. It's a tied ball game with, I think it was about 20 odd seconds left. Annalie Maley goes to free throw line, tied ball game, bricks both the free throws. You're like, okay, look, everyone misses free throws, especially me. You know, I'll miss my free throws. No worries. That's all good. Goes down the other end. It was almost like circus music was playing in this one, pro. Southside somehow managed to just turn the ball over with about 13 seconds left. Just a bad pass by one of their bigs. Goes down the length of the court, to the left side of the court. Annalie Maley, wide open layup on the left-hand side, pro. Hasn't obviously done enough skill work with you. Decides to shoot a left-hand layup with the right hand. Scrapes off the rim. Misses it. Southside come down, and a junky play ends up with their five man who shoots a fadeaway from just outside the block and a walk-off buzzer beater to win 97-95 or 99-97. I can't remember. It was a 2-point win. Absolute thievery. Should not have won that game. I don't know how the layup missed still to this day. But then they go back to game three, momentum Southside's way, and they absolutely obliterate them. So just a quick shout out to WNBL there. One of the crazier finishes I've seen in my time, pro.
That's crazy. That's insane. That is insane.
And would be a tough few weeks for Annalie Maley, I would assume, with you never want to go through that as a player and have that kind of all pointed towards you. I saw some comments from some teammates and a coach saying they, after game two, they try to get around her on the plane and make sure she was all right, because you never want to go through that kind of stuff. But you got a long off season now of thinking about, you know, those layups you worked on since you were probably 7 years old, 8 years old. You just made one of those and you would have won a championship, because, you know, that most likely would have come down and got a stop, you'd think. But that's the way the game goes. Fact or fake news, pro? What do you got?
Bogues, Mark Diagnault from Oklahoma City will win Coach of the Year over Joe Mazzulla. Fact or fake news?
Fact, he will. Yep, I think Mazzulla's done a great job too. And it's always hard when you got teams that are, Boston's just outright dominating the East. But I didn't have OKC as a one or two. I don't think many people did. Let's be honest. You know, I had some dude in the, I don't know where it was, and I think Instagram comments on one of our clips saying, "Oh, you picked OKC as a play." And I'm like, "Yeah, man, where did you pick him?" Like, I'll bet my life you as an OKC fan didn't pick him as one or two. And he said, "Yeah, I picked him at five or six." But that's my point. No one had them as a top two, top three threat in the West. So you have to give it to him. And I think it's his award to lose.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think just because of the roster of Boston already being set, and it just being pulverizing, and no one really expecting that from OKC. I had them third in the preseason, but I also had Minnesota like eight or something like that. So sometimes you pick them, sometimes you don't. But I think, what Mark's been, he's done as far as development as a coach and what he's done for that team and organization. And, I like him because he doesn't seem like he's too full of himself. He doesn't ever seem like he like loses his shit. He seems like he knows what he's doing. He processes things well. He's done well with that roster. You know, he had to deal with Chet being out the whole year last year. He's got all these guys he's got to play. And I thought he's done a super job. I think he's going to win it.
Agreed. Totally. Just one this week?
Yeah, that's it, folks.
One and done. And I'll just finish with this. So there was a bit of pushback on the Bronny James post that we made. So there's people saying that, he could play NBL today, because I made that little comment saying, "I don't think you play the NBL right now." No, he can't. Like, today? No. Now, another year or two of college, I think he's definitely capable of playing in the NBL. But as of today, he's averaging 4 points at 38% in college basketball. Like, you're not coming over to the NBA and playing.
On a terrible team.
So there's a lot of people out there that are, I think, blinded by the media narrative, hook, line, and sinker, LeBron James' son, all that. Not there yet. And might get there. Might become an All-American junior year, senior year, come out and have a successful basketball career. As of today, he is not an NBL player. We wouldn't sign him. We wouldn't sign him to play. I think he's still got a year or two of work before he's even considering the pro. So pump the brakes for all the people out there. NBA, that's why I said NBL.
But then again, entitlement because of who his dad is. So, like, Yeah, like in an unbiased world, he is not an NBA player right now. No, nowhere near it. In my opinion, probably should have went to like a smaller school, Oral Roberts, something like that, where he could do a little bit more and put the ball in his hand and just sort of develop through it, or be a total role player on a really good team. But yeah, he's nowhere near that. But he might get drafted based on who his dad is, you know, and the teams wanting to keep him or maybe have a chance to get LeBron. I still think that's in play because teams are that desperate. But no,
he won't be coming out for a year or two at least, right? Like, there's no way he can come out after this season.
Bogues, I've seen crazier things. Should he? No. Like, if I'm an NBA team with integrity, I'm not drafting him. You know, like, but there's a lot of moving parts to this. I mean, LeBron has that much power. He's probably the most powerful athlete that ever lived. I mean, he could just, like, you know, slip a media leak. LeBron's going to go wherever drafted his son, blah, 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 and some team might be enticed to get a 39, 40, 41-year-old LeBron James for the next couple of years, you know, to just draft his son, you know, in the first round. I don't know. I'm not a conspiracy theorist like that, but I've seen crazier things happen. In a unbiased world of just, is he good enough or is he not? He's not good enough. He's 2 years away.
I agree.
Of even being an impact player, you know, a 15, 16 point game, a game guy. He's about 2 years. Now let's also, he went through a heart attack or a heart issue. So like that affected things, but it didn't affect things totally where like he would have been the star if that didn't happen. But I will give him that. He has dealt with some adversity, some conditioning issues because of that. But yeah, nowhere close.
Yeah. If this was Joe Blow, from, you know, Indiana, no one would even be talking about him, and I think he's still a year or two away. And I agree with that tweet that LeBron put out recently. Let him do his thing and work in silence and get it done, and we'll see where he's at. But for those of you who think he's ready to be a pro anywhere in the world as of today, he's still a year or two at least off that. So we'll watch that space, pro. All right. Thank you for another week. Any final
time.
Commiserations for the people, pro?
Hopefully yeah, Landale got fucked this week, but
did he?
That's just my opinion.
Damn, you're choosing a 7-4 guy over a 15-6-5 guy? That's why you're not a GM, bro.
The 15-6-4 guy isn't my guy. Fucking Landale is, so.
Yeah. A bit of bias.
Because, yeah, no doubt about it.
Unconscious bias. All right, man. See you next week.
All right. Later, guys.